Healthy alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. Healthy Alternatives is about what all of us really want, which is to reach optimum health. We want to feel better, live longer, and enjoy life more. That's what this program is all about. Every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue or concern you should know more about that can really have an impact on you. I'm going to start with a sound, see if you can identify it. That's the sound of bees buzzing. What you may not be aware of is in this country, we've lost about 40% of our bee colonies because they're suffering from colony collapse disorder. And scientists have not known what that is. They've been researching it. And in effect, this is so important because honeybees pollinate a third of all U.S. crops. The foods we eat, the fresh fruits, the vegetables, would not exist without honeybees to pollinate them. Now, recently, there was a story in the New York Times linking a virus and a fungus together as to what's killing the bees. Sounds good. We may have an alternative here as to what's going on, but they missed a very important aspect, and that is pesticides. Bayer Crop Science produces a pesticide that a lot of beekeepers are thinking is what's really disorientating and killing their bees. Bayer has said when used correctly, there is no real risk in this. Now, in this study that was in the New York Times, the lead author was a Montana bee researcher named Dr. Jerry Bromenschenk. Interesting thing, Bromenschenk was originally to be an expert witness for beekeepers who brought a class action suit against Bayer in 2003. He dropped out of the suit, and he immediately received a significant research grant from Bayer to study bee pollination, and he's continued to get those grants over the years. And in effect, he's the one who published this research, but it wasn't pointed out in the New York Times. In effect, the guy who is going to be a witness for the beekeepers may have been bought out and is now a person who's supporting Bayer. One of the reasons you want to look at the notion of that it's the pesticides and not the notion of the virus and the fungus is very few bee losses occur among organic beekeepers. The whole notion of pesticides out there really needs to be explored and not ignored, because when you're talking about a third of the U.S. food crop disappearing in developing countries, it could be even more, we're talking about potentially catastrophic results. So we really need to look at the real connection that may be there by independent researchers looking at the notion of pesticides and the health of bees. Today we're going to be talking about Alzheimer's, a difficult topic, but we're going to be covering it in a different way with my guest today, who spent 7 years caring for her mom who had Alzheimer's, and it wound up moving into a very unexpected fascinating journey that she actually had by recording conversations with her mom, learning to ballroom dance, and we'll get to that in a little bit as to what that role that played. And she's written a book on it called The Long Hello, The Other Side of Alzheimer's. And we'll be talking to her in just a moment. If you want to know more about me, you can click on the globe on this page or go to teplitz.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. Now, every week at this point, I like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough, a new discovery, the latest information about healthy alternatives that you can use for yourself, your family, and your loved ones. Because of my guest today, we're going to be talking about Alzheimer's. What I want to do is talk about the healthy breakthroughs after the interview with my guest and really relate those breakthroughs to what you can do to look at preventing and delaying Alzheimer's. So before I bring my guest on, what I'd like to do is pause for this message.
Every one of us is under stress from work, family, the economy, layoffs, the inability to retire. These are the realities today. Even if you're doing okay, we all have friends and relatives experiencing hard times. Hey, just watching the news can make you nervous. Make no mistake, there's nothing benign about stress. It can lead to high blood pressure, digestive problems, difficulty concentrating, and increased risk of disease. That's why Dr. Jerry Teplitz wrote the book Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. He presents easy, effective techniques to reduce stress, eliminate pain, relieve insomnia, and gain an overall sense of well-being. Managing Your Stress is fully illustrated and provides hands-on, proven methods you can use immediately. Dr. Teplitz knows how to cut to the chase. He begins working with you from the very first page of Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Click on the cover that you see on the WebTalkRadio.net page in front of you and buy it now. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and it will change your life.
So welcome back to Healthy Alternatives. Dr. Jerry Teplitz here, and my guest today is Kathy Borey. Kathy has a degree in health and law, but nothing prepared her for 7 years she spent caring for her mother who had Alzheimer's and Parkinson. This was heartbreaking, but it also turned out to be an unexpectedly fascinating journey that she went on. She wound up recording conversations with her mother, writing a memoir, learning to ballroom dance as ways to tell both her and her mother's story. Kathy has written the lyrical memoir, The Long Hello, The Other Side of Alzheimer's, and she was invited to, in effect, present and launch this project at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. She was a top finalist for the Canadian Broadcast Corporation's Literary Awards, and Kathy, in effect, now brings her mother's message of hope and inspiration to the world. So, Kathy, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Well, thank you, Jerry. I'm so pleased to be here today.
So I've got a question for you. In my introduction, you have learning ballroom dancing part of the story, and ballroom dancing you don't usually put together with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Can you explain how that comes into play?
It does sound a little unusual. Well, what happened, Terry, was that when my mom was sick, I can't remember exactly how it came about, but I think I'd been watching swing dancers and had decided that might be fun. So I ended up taking ballroom dance lessons because I love music and I love dance. And as it turned out, it wasn't what I was expecting, and it ended up doing things for me that I could not have anticipated. So I think the main thing was that I learned how to follow instead of lead, which is a wonderful metaphor for what I was trying to learn to do with my mother. It was also a way to tell my side of the story on the dance floor, because dance becomes a story on its own on the floor, so I was able to tell that story in different ways. Another thing that it did, Jerry, which people probably don't expect.
Hold on a second, Kathy. So in terms of were you doing ballroom dancing, or were you doing like creative dancing to represent emotions and feelings and stuff like that?
Both. I was able to do both. Because I was doing ballroom dancing, the club that I belong to, we do performances twice a year where we do performances with either our teacher or a partner, and we are able to do choreographed routines of any kind. And I chose to do more creative stories, so I felt that I was able to really do a creative dance piece on the floor twice a year that represented my experience with my mom.
Well, that's really fascinating. A use of dancing to really express yourself. That's neat. So then what, though, inspired you? It's a long way going from ballroom dancing and, you know, working with your mom over these 7 years to creating the book, The Long Hello, The Other Side of Alzheimer's. What inspired you to start moving into doing a book and doing it in the unusual format? You'll have to tell us what lyrical memoir is, because I'm not really sure myself.
Yes, that's an interesting question. You know, everything about this experience with my mom was unexpected. And Alzheimer's, many things about it, you don't know what's going to happen. And this is exactly another example of that, Jerry. I had always wanted to write, but had never written. I was so busy doing other things. And when my mom got sick, we'd do a lot of things over and over again, like go to the same restaurant or sit in the den watching birds. And what happened was I just started to see these little episodes like scenes or film clips. And what ended up happening, which I had no control over, was that the words that I wanted to start telling the story, what words I wanted to use, came out lyrical and like film clips. And because I recorded my mother's conversations, to my astonishment, her words were much more lyrical and poetic than they ever had been before. So I think in a sense we both found poetic ways to tell our stories.
Now, with people with Alzheimer's, they actually start losing their ability to have a conversation. So how did you maintain conversations with your mom?
Yes, that's true. The thing is, you just never know when that's going to happen, and it can take quite a while. It's a long disease. So to begin with, we had normal conversations, and then I had to sort of shorten my questions, and over time, she was still able to talk for a long, long time. It didn't always make sense to me. I didn't always have the capability to understand what she was telling me. But, you know, really until the later years, we were able to communicate with words for really much longer than I was expecting.
Uh-huh. So, and just so the listeners know, my mom had Alzheimer's, and she got to the stage where she could say two words, and then everything moved into gobbledygook. So
that's true. That's what happens. At that point, what we did, and I think what a lot of people do, is I would sing, she could hum along, we listened to music, lots of touching, lots of love. You know, that connection, in my opinion, never goes away. So you just keep communicating at whatever level they invite.
There's actually research supporting what you're saying there, Kathy, that music is one of the last things that an Alzheimer person loses the ability to hook into. And also, if you're reading them stories, that's another piece. And so on this research piece, they would read the people who had Alzheimer's different stories each day. And then they had another group, they'd read them the same story over each day because, you know, thinking that, well, they didn't remember. The people that they read different stories to, actually, it seemed like they stayed more engrossed in it in a vague way, but more engrossed, versus the ones that they read the same story over and over to again, they got actually more irritated and antsy and that kind of stuff. So it's like there's somewhere in there that they knew that they had heard this again and again and again and wanted something different. So I think what you're saying, how you worked with your mom, is right in line with what I've read with the research. That's perfect.
Yes, you're quite right. And there have been lots done with music and poetry and rhyming. And there's lots of creative work being done that shows that people can stay engaged in those ways, you know, for a long time. You're quite right.
So so you come out of a background of degrees in law and health, and the question is, how did this prepare you for caring and being there for your mom, or did it help at all?
Yeah, well, you know, it's all hindsight. It's tricky to tease out some of these things, but I suppose when I think about it, I think that, you know, generally speaking, we go through life and we choose to take on certain adventures and risks, and those things help us build strength for the tricky times or the next hurdle. And I think that the health background probably gave me, you know, definitely gave me some skills, some of which I needed, but hardly any.
Kathy, what aspect of health were you your degree in?
Because right, I started out in nursing. I got my registered nurse certificate and then my degree in nursing, and then I didn't nurse again after that. I went on to do health administration. And I think a lot of people say, oh, you were so lucky you were a nurse. And I think, oh, boy, that's not necessarily true, because really it makes you more afraid. You know too much. You know what's around the corner. You know, you really do. And that's why nurses make the worst patients. I can't say that my law did anything, but I think that my interest or propensity for enjoying the theater and fiction and stories, which I love, probably facilitated, let's say perhaps helped me have a more open mind for how mom's mind changed, and how for interesting characters, and for how they opened up the acceptance of other universes going on and where people are in their realities. I think that probably was an asset.
So in terms of communicating with your mom, you talk about letting her lead in the conversations. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, that was a hard lesson to learn, Jerry. It's all about following and not leading. But I can
ballroom dancing.
Oh my goodness! What a metaphor. You know, a lot of feet get stepped on in reality and otherwise. But I can remember one day driving down the street with my mom and going by a drugstore that had been there for years, and she said to me, "Oh, look, Kath, that's a lovely new store." And this was early on, and I thought my job, and many people think this, is that if I reoriented her, this would be good. This would be good. And I said, oh, no, it's not, Mom. That's been there for years. And, of course, this upset her, made her feel silly. And I came to understand that it was really absolutely no point in doing that in practically any conversation. And when I stopped doing that, stopped initiating and controlling and correcting and filling in words, everything was better. She was happier. I was happier. It was actually quite fun. It was like living fictional lives. And this is what we struggle with. We want people to be who they were and to stay in the reality that we know them to be in. And when that stops, we become very uncomfortable. But it's all about the follow.
So we're going to pick this up again in a moment, because I need to take a break, and I'd like to remind you that you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net, and we'll be back with my guest, Kathy Bore, in a moment, and we're talking about something that people tend to not like to talk about, that's Alzheimer's, but we're talking about it in the fascinating journey way that Kathy had with her mom. We'll be right back.
Improve your golf game today. It's absolutely possible using the DVD Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf, from stress management coach Dr. Jerry Teplitz. Par and Beyond is a revolutionary new concept that yields immediate results. You'll experience the difference the very next time you play. Even the golf pros love this method. Randy Taylor hadn't placed in a tournament for 8 years, but just 1 week after taking this seminar, he came in second. It's not just in your swing, it's in your head. That's why T&I Golf Magazine calls Dr. Teplitz a headmaster. Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf, is available on DVD. You can get it by clicking on the Par and Beyond cover on the webtalkradio.net screen in front of you. You'll learn new, powerful techniques that will instantly improve your game, whether you're a pro or a duffer. This is your new secret to success on the course. It's a totally different approach, and it comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. And don't tell your golf buddies. You're about to become a winner.
So we're listening today to me talking to Kathy Bore. Kathy has a degree in health and law. And that didn't prepare her very well. For 7 years, she had to care for her mom, who had Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. But it took her on both a heartbreaking and unexpected, fascinating journey. She recorded her mom's conversations. She wrote a memoir. She's wound up doing ballroom dancing, as in effect, learning how the notion of following becomes an important part in relating to Alzheimer's. Her book was launched at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. The book is The Long Hello, The Other Side of Alzheimer's, and you can get that at kathiebory.com, and it's spelled C-A-T-H-I-E, Borie, B-O-R-R-I-E.com, kathiebory.com. So, Kathy, before we took the break, we were talking about in terms of learning how in talking to your mom, you didn't bring up, you know, like the old reality, in effect, I keep saying, oh, you know this person or stuff like that. You in effect, you played more of a kind of a game with it, would you say?
No, I wouldn't use that word. I would say that I didn't always succeed. I tried to respect and go to her reality rather than mine.
So, like, your example was you were driving along and she saw that and said, that's a new store. You would, in effect, be saying, yeah, you know, it opened very recently, as opposed to trying to...
I'd say, good eye, Mom. That's a new store.
Cool. That's a neat thought that I think a lot of people really miss with Alzheimer's, this notion of this person's got a new reality, but I need them to be in the old reality of who they are. Instead of just recognizing you got a baby here who doesn't have the memory of what happened before. So let me ask you a question. Go ahead, Kathy.
People do make the reference to sort of people going with Alzheimer's going back to childhood, but I don't really see that either, and I think those words are not useful. I like to think of it as people that are in a new reality or a parallel universe that we simply don't understand. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, we don't understand the animal world and how they think and, you know, how they move through the world. We don't speak their language. It doesn't mean that it's subservient to ours. So I tried all the time. I didn't always succeed, but I tried to hang on to that, which is... you know, which is a more respectful notion. I've talked to a lot of people who, when their parents don't recognize them, they completely go to pieces and don't visit anymore because they can't stand it. But then that to me says the ego is taking over a little bit too much, and it doesn't matter that they don't know who you are now. They've always known who you are, and you just go along with whoever they think they are. You are, and, you know, sometimes that can be quite a bit of fun.
So I assume that started to happen in your mom's situation where friends and family started to not come as much because of, you know, they weren't being recognized. Is that correct?
Yes, that's a very good point. And, you know, those are treacherous, tricky waters. It's so, so difficult because, people who have – the parallel can be made with anybody with a chronic disease. I think people stop visiting. I think they do this because – they're uncomfortable, you know, maybe they don't know how to have a conversation anymore. I think they may be fearful and sometimes it's depressing. And I think these things are all understandable.
So how do you then keep somebody whose friend or family, how do you keep encouraging them to keep coming?
Well, that's tricky. I asked for help, and I got it from some sources and didn't from others. And I guess at the end of the day, you just have to accept that because there's nothing much you can do about it. And concentrate on those who do want to come and, you know, keep supporting them and thanking them because it's something as a human beings, we should be always stepping to the plate for people who are suffering.
Yeah, when my mom was in the gobbledygook stage that I talked about earlier with her Alzheimer's, I went to visit her once, and I live in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and she was in Florida, so I didn't visit her very often. But when I went, I wound up kind of just rubbing her arm, and she actually took my hand and started having me rub her head and her shoulders. and would keep having me do that. And one of the things I realized is these folks don't get any loving touch when they're in a an Alzheimer's facility. They're kind of just stacked there, and they're getting medical touch, but not loving touch. And it brought back the research done in Bulgaria to my mind, where they had babies who were abandoned at birth put in facilities with no touch, and they would die very quickly, versus ones where the caretakers would hold them and cuddle them and touch them, and they thrived. And so I'm wondering if you were seeing touch being an element of assisting your mom.
Yes, that's a nice story about your mom. I like that. Yes, definitely. You know, it's intuitive, really, isn't it? As human beings, that's just part of what love is. And there are places, many, many more places now that care for people with Alzheimer's that address that in major ways and take very good care of people with touch and, you know, loving touch and music and all the things we need as human beings. But absolutely, I mean, you know, I was always with my arms around my mom, or, you know, holding her hands, or laying with my head in her lap so she could fiddle with my hair. I mean, that's what it's all about, really, isn't it? And it absolutely has to help. It's just intuitive.
Now, we don't want to ignore the other side of this and make it sound like it's all roses, because it was very difficult being a caregiver and the health issues that your mom had. Can you talk a little bit about that side of the equation for you and how you dealt with that?
Yes. You know, it's very, very hard, and there was much of it that was very depressing when Mom first started to lose her memory. It was upsetting for her. She was down, very, very depressed, and of course, I really followed her feelings and felt the same way myself. There's only so much you can do to someone, to help someone, and no matter how much you do, you cannot fix it. So we certainly had the support of her physician, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's there is suffering, and you can't take it all away. And you just do whatever you can to make that person feel better, and whatever you can to make yourself feel better. For me, I did the ballroom dancing, and I think I also spend a lot of time taking afternoon naps in the fetal position because it was very, very hard and very down. Very downtime, that can't be avoided. And that's very much a part of my story in my book. I don't sidestep that. And I think that if you try to avoid it, you're in big trouble, because it's just, you know, sadness is part of the reality.
Yeah, and one of the books that I've written that I'd actually recommend listeners to take a look at is Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change, because there are techniques in there that can help you deal with this kind of stress that you're experiencing, because caregivers really have to take care of themselves. There's nobody else who's going to look out for you, and so you need to care for yourself as well. So now,
yes.
What from the flip side, how did you saw this as a gift as well? So how did that come into play for you?
Well, I think probably the most important part was that I had the idea to record her voice, thank heavens. And as a result of that, I heard things I wasn't expecting. And her insight and her humor and really almost an astonishing poetic sensibility emerged, which I was not expecting. And that really sustained me, and I think sustained her too, because she liked being taped. I suppose it's a little bit like Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, or, you know, that book about his Frankl's experience in the Holocaust and how he found meaning in a situation you'd think there was none, and how no one can take that from you. And I think that this experience with my mother, her words and her language and the funny things she did, really added to the beauty, you know, added beauty to an experience I wasn't expecting at all. I didn't want to be a caregiver, Jerry. I didn't really like that job. I don't want to do it again, but I did show up for it. And when I learned how to listen, I found that really dark moments were really pierced through with her beauty.
Now, how will your book help people who are caring for people who have Alzheimer's?
That's a good question. I think the response I can give you really stems from my audience's responses, because I've been presenting for 6 years. The feedback I get from them has really shown me how this book helps. And the people who are caregiving find in the book ways to caregive better by listening and by following, so that they are finding a way to listen to people with Alzheimer's, and the whole experience is sort of one that's more filled with grace. People who have already gone through it will find, in my book, I think they will see that they've been understood, and that always feels good and is therapeutic. And the people that are about to go through it, the feedback I've been given is that the book provides a sort of compass for them for navigating the waters.
So we've been talking today to Kathy Borey about a difficult area, but talking about it in a fascinating way of how the journey of Alzheimer's can be looked at very, very differently. You're going to want to look at getting her book, The Long Hello, The Other Side of Alzheimer's, and you can just go to her website, kathiebory.com, C-A-T-H-I-E, Borey, B-O-R-R-I-E.com. Kathy, thank you for being a guest on Healthy Alternatives today.
Thank you, Jerry. I've loved our conversation. Thank you.
It was fun. So with Kathy sharing her, in effect, journey with her mom, what I thought I'd like to do now is give you the section that I like to share on healthy breakthroughs. Again, it's the new discoveries, latest information about healthy alternatives that you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. Now, Alzheimer's may actually be being misdiagnosed. Dementia may be being misdiagnosed when the actual underlying cause for the elderly person may be a deficiency of vitamin B12. How do you correct a vitamin B12 deficiency? Well, you do injections or you do 1,000 milligrams of oral B12. And a very short period of time, if that is the cause of the mental dysfunctioning, it'll be corrected. So very simple way of starting out the journey of exploring what you can do to help a person with dementia. What can you do further to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's? Well, there was a study published in the Archives of Neurology, and they looked at giving people 400 IUs of vitamin E and 500 milligrams of vitamin C every day, and these elderly people had a reduced risk of Alzheimer's of 78%. Another option, curcumin is a spice that's found in turmeric. And what they found in this study combining curcumin with vitamin D might actually give a system a boost to wipe out the plaques that form in the brain of somebody that does have Alzheimer's. Other options are oils, coconut oil and fish oil, as ways of reducing the inflammation associated with dementia. One study suggested that DHA, which is in fish oil, may actually reduce the risk of Alzheimer's by a third. Another study from the University of California at Irvine with mice was giving them niacinamide, a dose of about 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day. It almost completely prevented cognitive decline. And finally, at Columbia University, there was a study with 695 people who were dementia-free, 65 years and older. Those who had taken a higher intake of folic acid had a lower risk of developing the disease. How much folic acid do you need? About 800 micrograms of folic acid daily will do it. So there are things you can be doing for yourself right now to prevent Alzheimer's ever becoming an issue in your life or the life of friends or loved ones. So let them know about these different healthy breakthroughs that they can do. My guest next week is going to be Dr. Duffy Spencer. She is a social psychologist. She hosts her own radio show called Just Relationships. And she really looks at helping people get rid of that excess baggage that they carry to get on, to be able to focus on what they want out of their lives. And she's written a book called Spice, The Essential Ingredients for Effective Living. So we're going to be looking at cooking up what is the healthy person, the healthy relationship. Join us next week. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you can find out more about me at teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com, or follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.